any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll discuss the impact of President Obama's government reorganization plan with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman, and a preview of this year's presidential election with Democracy for America Chair Jim Dean. And later, AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Liz Schuller and Metal Trades Department President Ron Ault will look back at President Kennedy's signing of Executive Order 10988, which paved the way for collective bargaining rights for federal employees. Up first, MVP Dwight Bowman, AFGE's 14th District. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, and thank you for having me again.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Now, last week, President Obama announced a plan to reorganize and consolidate the federal government, impacting a number of workers, including some that you represent. Tell us about this plan and the impact.
Well, it's our understanding that it would effectively get rid of what is now the Commerce Agency, and it would fold in a number of other agencies in terms of those issues which cross platforms or cross agencies. And actually, I think we look at it as being a good idea. The question is the implementation. We've always believed that sunshine on the federal agencies is a good thing. What we've always looked forward to is being included in the process of determining how it was going to be done, in other words, the implementation.
Have you had any indication that you would be included in that process?
No, I have not. And I would say that we know that this was began back in March of 2011, and this is an indication that a lot of thought has gone into the idea of merging these agencies, but we have not been engaged in that. And going forward, I would be very surprised if the unions had a real opportunity to contribute, given the attitude of the Congress towards unions and towards the administration.
MVP Bowman, what's the danger of the unions not being involved in the process?
Well, the biggest danger is to the public itself and the services provided. When you have the workers involved in helping to understand how an agency works and what doesn't work in an agency, you've got a better chance of having success. When the employees don't have input either directly or through their union, if they have a union, things kind of go awry.
You had mentioned that there's the potential for the elimination of the Commerce Department. Talk about that impact on AFGE members and the services that the department provides.
Well, the reality is we don't know what the impact will be. Mm-hmm. What the president has said is that the loss of positions will not impact the employees because it will be done through attrition. If that be the case, then we've always believed that that's the best way to have a major reorganization that affects the employees. But we're looking at a potential of something under 2,500 employees being that we represent directly being affected. We have noted that whenever there's a major reorganization, there has been a problem if the employees are not engaged.
And you had mentioned that this was something that may have been in the works for a little while. What do you think about the timing of the announcement now?
I don't think it can be denied that politics are at play. We have a major election for the presidency of the United States coming up at the end of the year. And both parties are taking actions and making plans and implementing plans that will affect how the public sees their particular party and their hope is to give themselves an advantage going into this election. So I'm not surprised at the timing. It plays to the idea that the Republicans are always saying that there's a need to make government smaller. We would like to ensure, we would like to have the administration ensure that whatever is done and whenever it's done, that it be done in the most profitable way for the citizens of the United States and for the our members who serve those citizens.
And so you make a great point there about doing what's in the best interests of the American people. Talk about that need to serve the people's interests in the way that the government was designed to.
Well, you know, ours is a democratic process. We have a government that is of the people, by the people, and for the people. When the people are engaged, everything works a lot better because they have buy-in. When we have federal agencies that serve the public, it is in the best interest for both the employees who work for these agencies and for the public to have a say. The most important thing is to recognize that the reason that these agencies exist is because they provide a valuable service to the infrastructure, to the people, and the infrastructure of the nation. So we want things to work. The better things work, the stronger our nation is, and the better we all get along.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman. NVP Bowman, do you think that that gets lost in the conversation sometimes, that that the government really is here to provide goods, services to the American people, to really serve their best interests?
Absolutely. And I think that most Americans and those of us who represent folks in these agencies look at the political climate that has existed particularly for the last year. And we see that what is good for America has been set aside by many politicians in order to ensure that they have the best chance of being reelected or electing those that they want in office. We've also seen various private sector individuals invest their time, their talent, and their money to ensure that their candidates win without regard to the consequences of their actions. And by that I mean, there are times when the what is good for America is pushed to the side while the politics are played out. And I understand that, that the belief there is that once they get in office or once they get their people in office, then they'll be able to correct whatever went wrong. And that's not what's in the best interest of this country.
What's the danger of delaying those critical decisions?
Well, when we talk about appointments, for instance, when you do not have the head of an agency appointed or the head of a particular activity appointed, then you do not have the leadership that is needed to carry out the mission. And when the mission isn't being carried out, then the public isn't being served, service isn't being provided, the infrastructure is falling apart. It's just like the foundation of anything. If your foundation isn't strong, then things crumble.
It was also announced, NVP Bowman, that the Small Business Administration would be elevated to a cabinet-level status. Can you comment on that?
Correct. And that was something that I think we were all happy to see. We recognize that there's a financial crisis in the world, and we're very concerned about that aspect of the crisis in the United States. Putting business administration at the table with the president is a good idea. It brings focus to the problem that small businesses do have.
Have you heard any feedback from any of your members who work at SBA on this move?
Actually, I have not at this point.
And so as a leader at AFGE, what's your next move on this situation?
Well, we want to see the details. The devil is always in the details, as it is said. If the administration shares with us how they intend to implement what they see as being the focal points, we're in a position then to help them. It's not our intent to be critical. It is our intent to help the process along. It's very important for us to know what is going to help happen in advance, particularly when it comes to the representation of the folks that we do represent. If there is something that is not good going to happen that affects them, the more advanced notice that we have, the better that we can figure out how to prevent it or how to help the employees through it.
NVP Bowman, if you were the one making the decisions, if you were sitting at the president's desk, how would you go about this sort of restructure?
Oh, I'd have one of my top people to bring in all of the interested parties, give them an opportunity to see what the plan is thus far and to contribute to that plan. And it would not make any difference whether it took one meeting or 10 meetings. I would want to have significant input to make sure that we got the best deal that we possibly could for those services being rendered.
And in all of your experience representing federal workers, how important is it to you throughout your career to have involved a lot of people in decisions that you've had to make?
Well, I have found that by involving the right people and making sure that they had input, then whatever the issue was better handled. When you have buy-in from those people who are affected, then it not only makes good sense, but it makes good allies, and it also helps you in the future, because when you have to do it again, I mean, these things don't just happen one time. You can look back to see how things were handled in the past, what mistakes were made, what things were done correct. It makes it run smoother, and it saves money. Anytime you have a reorganization, you actually have a greater outlay of money than you normally would in terms of the day-to-day operation. And if your intent, as the president's intent here, is to streamline the agency's business, is also to save money, the best thing that you can do is make sure that you do it right and efficiently.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're continuing with Dwight Bowman, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President. MVP Bowman, this year we have seen an attack on public workers throughout all levels of government. Why do you think that is?
Well, there are those who would like to eliminate the unions and to have greater control over the entire workforce. It's unfortunate, but there are those individuals who believe that the profit margin is not as great as it should be, and that by having a union in particular, this lessens their opportunity for those profits.
Now, how important is it for public workers at all levels, local, state, and federal, to fight back and protect the rights that they've gained?
Well, our country is multi-layered, and it is best when everybody has a seat at the table and makes a contribution. By having unions, by having employees have an opportunity to have a say on the job, it strengthens not only strengthens and empowers them, but it makes them a part of what is going on. And anytime employees are a part of what is going on, there is greater loyalty, greater respect, and not only greater contribution, but something that weaves in the fiber of togetherness, for lack of a better word. I know that's not the best word to use, but it pulls us all together working in the same direction.
Now, I know you remain quite close with your membership and you're in constant contact with them. When the issues were happening at the state level in Wisconsin and Ohio and elsewhere, were you getting feedback from them? Were they issuing their concerns to you about that situation?
Absolutely. It signaled to our membership and people across the country that we were in a new era. A new mean-spirited era where public employees were under attack, but not only public employees, but all employees were under attack. And that's something that was new to many people, because many of the workers are young and had not had an experience where workers were really under attack, were visibly under attack.
When you were keeping up with what was happening at the state level, did it bring you back to a couple of years prior, whenever you were dealing with similar types of difficulties with the previous administration and the Fenty administration?
Absolutely. Mr. Fenty had been anti-union, most assuredly, and this showed that this whole theme was expanding. And we recognized that it wasn't a Democrat or Republican thing. It was individuals in control wanting the top seat, the control by themselves. Being able to mandate without opposition whatever it is they believe to be correct. They were not inclusive. We saw this amongst African American leaders. We saw it amongst those who were non-African-American leaders. But watching individuals say, I do not wish to enjoin others in my decision-making process, was very disheartening.
As you know, last November, workers in Ohio were faced with the potential of losing some collective bargaining rights, and they stood up together and voted down that measure on the ballot. Do you think that's a signal to other state workers and all public workers that they're not going to take some of those initiatives to strip them of their rights?
Well, it's said that America is not totally asleep. It woke people up and indicated to them that there was a need for them to be directly involved in the process. You know, in our country, we've had as many as 50% of the population not involved in national elections. That is, in my opinion, a crisis, and it is so unfortunate. But when, but there's an old saying, all politics are local. And when public employees in particular were directly affected by the actions of governors and state legislatures, it was obvious that even though they had not been, shall we say, very vocal for a long period of time, they woke up very quickly. They joined hands, recognizing that the threat against one was a threat against all.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman. NVP Bowman, let's shift gears to the District of Columbia. Give us an update on how things are going in the D.C. government.
The D.C. government is a very interesting entity right now. The unfortunate thing, and not to, to hide it, is we have seen a number of the politicians in the District of Columbia government under attack, if you will, because of questionable activities and charges against them. It's disappointing that some of them have recently resigned, that investigations continue. But we believe that in the end, we're going to come out on top as a city, that we will get through this and we will prosper.
How's the morale of the workforce? We had touched earlier on some difficulties in the previous administration. Now with Mayor Gray in office, how's the morale of the members that you represent?
Well, unfortunately, it is not high. Now, what we said at the outset was, unfortunately, Mr. Fenty was anti-union, and we believe that he was going to foster an attack to get rid of the union. And we supported Mr. Gray with the understanding that he was not anti-union and that he would be much more open to us and to the employees that we represent. That has been true. There is a vast difference between the previous administration and the current administration. The unfortunate thing is that because of the climate, because of all of the allegations, there has not been much progress. The administration the current administration has failed to be able to move forward in a very progressive manner, and as a result, we are delivering the service to the citizens, but it's not as effective as we would like for it to be.
If you were able to get more time with the mayor, what would be your top concern? What would be the top issue that you would want to have addressed?
The top issue right now is the establishment of a labor management committee and the filling of the liaison position, which would be a liaison between labor and the mayor's office. And the reason for that is because that would take a lot of pressure off of the mayor. It would take some things off of his plate in terms of the day-to-day operations so that he could work on the planning more directly for the city. We believe that a good labor management committee would be helpful to the city, not only in terms of resolving day-to-day problems, but in terms of planning for the future.
And how optimistic are you that that position would be filled?
Well, there has been an announcement put out indicating that the position is vacant and that we're looking, or the administration is looking, to fill the position. We have been asked to submit names of candidates that might be acceptable not only to labor but to the administration, and we're doing that.
So that's probably an encouraging sign for you, at least to be able to move forward in that positive direction.
It certainly is. And my last conversation with the mayor, he indicated that he was going to make the announcement. And since that conversation, the announcement has been made. I have spoken with Josh Williams, who is the president of the AFL-CIO Central Labor Council in Washington. We have discussed the idea of having the mayor come before the council and talk to us about the liaison position, and all of the things that are on our plate, that are on our mind at this point in time. And I think we're headed in that direction.
We know at AFGE that staffing and funding of agencies has been an ongoing problem for years. Talk about that impact on your agencies in the D.C. government.
Well, things have just gotten a little bit worse. You may be aware that there is a discussion about a cutback from the feds in terms of the D.C. budget. If that happens, we've had a financial crisis in the District of Columbia that has been ongoing. If that happens, that crisis will enlarge. I'm not sure, given the numbers, given the vast numbers that we're talking about, we're talking billions of dollars, how you overcome that. Then if you could raise taxes, that wouldn't help the situation. Certainly not greatly. You can't shut down agencies. We understand that if you contract out services, that's actually going to wind up costing the taxpayers even more. So we've got a dilemma that there's no answer to in the foreseeable future. It means greater austerity across the board.
And again, you bring up a great point. When faced with budget cuts, that goes far beyond just the removal of a position or a job. That's an impact directly on services provided to the public.
Absolutely. And in the healthcare industry, you know, that's paramount. We have the city has attempted to contract out services, and we haven't seen that work very well, which means that those services just aren't being provided. People who were being cared for are not now.
MVP Dwight Bowman, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll discuss this year's presidential election with Democracy for America Chair Jim Dean.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Attention AFGE members.
Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Attention AFGE members. Are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more. Visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Jim Dean, the chair of Democracy for America. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
So, although it's early, Jim, the 2012 election season will be here before we know it. Talk a little bit about the strategy for the president and maybe some other candidates going into this election season.
Well, I am hopeful that the president is really going to come out swinging, as he did on the jobs bill. But I'd like to see him come out swinging on a lot of issues and really have some conviction and demonstrate some conviction about the issues that are affecting people in this country who work for a living, about the issues that are affecting poor people in this country. I certainly think he can tout his accomplishments because he has quite a few accomplishments and they don't get covered very much in the media. But I'd really also like to see some vision here, particularly given that the contrast is going to be so great between him and him standing for the American people and the Republican candidate or candidates who are clearly standing with the top one or a few of the top 1% of income earners in this country.
Jim, do you see the president going back to some of his strategies from 2008 when he really rallied the country?
Well, I think it's tough because at any time you've been in the chair for 4 years, you're not going to be quite as well thought of as you are when you're a candidate running for the first time. I mean, 2008 was an incredible campaign, and I'm sure they want to employ the social networking strategies and as much of the grassroots stuff as they can in this campaign. But it's not going to be the same as it was in 2008.
What do you think some of the key issues will be as the election nears?
Well, listen, I'll give a shout-out to the Occupy folks because I think they've surfaced the key issue, which is whose side are you on, the 1% of this country or the 99% of this country? Economic justice, I think that's a huge issue in this country. And, you know, I think it's well and good to remind Americans that our standing in the world is way, way better than it was during the 8 years of George Bush. But economic justice, I think, is the key issue out here. And really, to me, it's as much an issue for the sake of business as it is for the sake of people who work for a living. Businesses must know right now that the reason that capitalism is failing is because they, in fact, are the beneficiaries of way too much government largesse, either in the form of tax breaks or favorable legislation, or as in the case of the investment banking business, outright bailouts. And so, you know, if we're going to have a capitalist system and if we're going to have a system that really offers opportunity and a decent living to Americans, we've got to change this whole thing around. And I'm not sure that American business will be at the leader or at the forefront of that issue, but certainly Obama should be, and he should be championing the 99% of people who work for a living in this country as opposed to big business interests.
How do you see the president using some of those issues like jobs, like the Occupy movement, like economic justice to separate himself from the Republican nominee?
Well, certainly embracing, and I mean really embracing, positions about tax reform, about sunsetting these Bush tax cuts, which really have caused so many of our structural deficit problems in our government. Those are things that he really needs to come out on and be less compromising on than he has in the past. I think some of the issues involving labor protections that we have seen in so many states around the country, also he needs to be coming out swinging. And listen, I mean, an issue that's close to him as anybody else, voting rights. You know, we've seen states that are making it more difficult to vote, in some cases really almost mirroring the Jim Crow legislation of the late 1800s. He needs to be coming out against that. So, you know, again, it's about conviction, it's about strength, and it's about really walking the walk with him.
You mentioned tax reform. What would you like to see out of a tax reform plan?
Well, right now, we certainly need to change and get rid of the Bush tax cuts. I mean, that's for starters. And really, all that does is get us back to a tax structure that we had during the Clinton era, when the economy was booming and people were making an awful lot of money, particularly wealthy people. So I frankly would like to see some things added, especially a speculation tax of some kind in our financial markets, which are behaving not like financial markets, but more like organized crime rings. And I think we could use the same type of tool certainly for our commodities markets, which also do not behave as a reflection of supply and demand, but really behave as more of a speculation tool on the part of gamblers who happen to be managing a lot of money. I think we really need to start tamping down some of the excessive behavior in the investment banking business. And frankly, I think we could restructure some of our corporate taxes as well. There's no way that General Electric should be making a profit of whatever it was, $10 billion, and then getting a $3 billion tax refund. That's just off the charts nuts at a time like this. And if we're really going to solve our structural deficit problems, which are serious, we need a taxation system that is fair and that reflects real shared sacrifice, not just folks like Mitt Romney able to get away with paying only 15% of his income in taxes while everybody has to pay a higher percentage.
Now, you know, working families and the labor movement played a critical role in helping to get President Obama elected in 2008. How do you see their roles in this election coming up?
Well, they have already done more for the reelection of President Obama than probably any single entity out there, simply by the work that they've been doing in Wisconsin and in Ohio. I mean, especially Ohio, a swing state. They galvanized and galvanized not just their members, but a large part of the electorate and certainly progressives to overturn SB 5. They clearly galvanized the same group of folks and a wider group of voters in Wisconsin to try to recall these senators, and they're at it again in helping get Governor Walker recalled, which I think we'll be successful at next year, and which Democracy for America is going to be a participant in. There are other states where anti-voter legislation has been passed, anti-women legislation has been passed, and anti-working people legislation has been passed, and there are going to be opportunities there to turn this around. And certainly when I think of, for example, the Florida legislature, probably our best chance right now to undo the agenda of Rick Scott, who's a terrible governor. Labor is playing a huge role in all of this and more. And I think those kinds of campaigns are not only doing more to get Obama reelected and win him key swing states in this election, but they're also changing the narrative and the debate in this election to what it really should be, which is the battle for working families, the rights of working families, the protections that we need to give them versus this, again, excessive income and excessive behavior on the part of the wealthiest 1% in this country.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Jim Dean, Chair of Democracy for America. Jim, you had mentioned SB 5 in Ohio. How important was that win in the overall grand scheme?
It was absolutely huge, and I've got to really hand it to the folks in labor because the biggest part of this started at the beginning in this petition gathering, signature gathering effort. When they showed up with 1.2 million signatures, far and above, many times more than the required amount, it became very clear not only to the folks in the state, but also the media nationally and other constituencies around the country, that this was a very much of a voter-driven movement. It was more than just a labor issue. It was an issue that affected every single American. It also was huge because it got a lot of folks, a lot of labor folks who might have voted Republican in the past, so-called Reagan Democrats, back into the fold. So that drive was the biggest part of the campaign because it carried the campaign through to a successful conclusion. So certainly, but again, it's not just Ohio. I mean, even though that's an important swing state, you're seeing action like this in Wisconsin, but you're also in a lot of other states that are critical in these elections for both the president and offices down the ticket. So labor's doing a great job right now. I think we're seeing a rebirth of the movement, and I think Americans who are not in labor understand that this is the group that is really protecting them as much as it is protecting their own members.
Jim, you and the folks at Democracy for America have always been very in tune with what's happening at the state level. Will you continue with that through this year and up to the elections?
I certainly want to right now where we have those opportunities. And those opportunities are very, very broad in terms of the issues that they encompass. I mean, there's campaign finance reform legislation or disclosure legislation in some states. There's states that are actually thinking of setting up a government option health care, such as Vermont did last year. There are states that want to reinforce equal rights for everybody. And there are, of course, states that are trying to do stuff about protecting voters and protecting labor. So we think that it's a great time right now to work on those issues. And in doing so, we are helping every single candidate up and down the ticket that believes in those issues. So whether it's the recall of Governor Walker or whether it's the chance for equality in Washington or Maryland or Minnesota or any of these issues, we are helping a lot on that. And certainly we're going to be supporting the candidates. We're huge fans of Elizabeth Warren's. We're big fans and have done a lot of work for several other candidates running for House, most notably Ilya Shaiman in Illinois 10. These are all good people that we're going to help along the way. But these state issues are important, and they'll change the narrative in the election as a whole.
We touched a little bit on voting rights earlier. Talk about what kind of a battle that's going to be going forward.
Well, it's going to be a tough battle because they're in tough states. We had a chance and an opportunity in Maine this last year, which we were successful at, along with a number of other great groups, at overturning the ban against same-day registration. So that was a good thing. The governor of my home state of Connecticut, Daniel Malloy, wants to bring in, as just announced, I think yesterday, that he wants to make same-day registration and the law of the state and get rid of the photo ID. So we have some good things that are going on there, but fighting the very stringent laws in places like Georgia is going to be very, very tough. And I really got to give a shout-out to the folks in Ohio, because while this SB 5 thing was going on last year, a lot of good people got the signatures on the ballot to repeal that stringent anti-voter legislation in Ohio. And because they got it on the ballot, it means that we can still work with the same rules of the reformed rules that we have right now in Ohio. And I think the voters will wisely choose to get rid of Governor Kasich's agenda on November in this November of 2012. But we have a lot of states to work with, but some of them are very, very tough.
When you go out and you're speaking with members of Democracy for America, what are they saying to you about initiatives to restrict their collective bargaining rights, to restrict their voting rights?
Well, you know, Jason, it's very interesting. Most of our members are not members of labor unions, but they are furious about it, and they're furious for several different reasons. One, much of this legislation has been railroaded through by governors and Republican leadership that refuses to compromise. Two, much as it has been railroaded through in spite of the fact that the unions have openly been willing to negotiate on the budget and, in fact, do what needed to be done to achieve a balanced budget in a number of states, and yet they've had this thrown in this face. So it violates our members' sense of fairness. And then there really is the other simple principle that I think most Americans really believe in, and that is this. If you work for a living in this country, you ought to be able to make a living. And dumping on people who make something like $50,000 or $60,000 a year or a lot less, you know, whether it's Governor Christie bullying teachers in New Jersey or Kasich trying to pass SB 5 or Scott Walker or any of those people, you know, it just does not – it really violates all of our sense of fairness. So our members are very engaged in this, and they see this these battles as an opportunity, again, to reestablish the narrative and to reestablish the fact that the voters really believe in fairness, and they don't necessarily believe in big businesses having a, you know, a complete free hand in, you know, trying to pay their people who work for them $2.50 an hour.
Jim Dean, Chair of Democracy for America. Jim, always great having you on the program with us.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll be joined by AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Liz Shuler and Metal Trades Department President Ron Ault. We'll look back at President Kennedy's signing of Executive Order 10988, which paved the way for collective bargaining rights for federal employees.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Attention AFGE members. Are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more. Visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Earlier this week, the AFL-CIO and its affiliated unions, including AFGE, celebrated the 50th anniversary of Executive Order 10988, signed by President Kennedy on January 17, 1962. The executive order began the progression toward federal workers being granted meaningful collective bargaining rights. Not only did it permit workers to join and engage in union activity, it set the stage for expanding these rights under Presidents Nixon, Ford, and Carter. Attendees such as Department of Labor Secretary Hilda Solis, Office of Personnel Management Director John Berry, and AFGE National Vice President Augusta Thomas came together to celebrate the bipartisan show of support from past presidents for the rights of federal workers. AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Liz Shuler discussed the importance of the executive order.
The importance of granting collective bargaining rights to federal sector workers, public sector workers, really demonstrates how effective labor management collaboration can be. And when you really listen to your employees and give them a voice at the table, literally at the collective bargaining table, you can discover new ways of doing business, more innovative ways, and solutions that perhaps management had never thought of.
Do you find it ironic almost that 50 years after that executive order was signed, just last year we're dealing with states like Ohio and Wisconsin trying to strip those rights away from state workers?
It is ironic, and I'll tell you, who would have thought that we would, in this day and age, still be fighting for the same rights that we've fought for so many years ago? But that's exactly what's happening, and I think it goes to show that the union movement really is the last leg standing in terms of organized progressive forces and really giving a voice to working people and community members and allied partners today is more important than ever.
Ron Ault, president of the AFL-CIO's Metal Trades Department, also addressed the significance of the executive order.
Well, it's like the importance of any group of workers getting rights. This is monumental. You know, before this, it was just meet and confer. So this entitled people to real bargaining rights that, like any other workforce in the United States, this brought these workers that before had been secondhand citizens to full citizenship.
Ault went on to provide a historical perspective behind President Kennedy's signing of the executive order.
Well, it was like any other legislative struggle. This thing had been on the books for years and years and years trying to get this passed. There'd been immense lobbying by organized labor to get this done. This was a group of workers that deserved to have full recognition. And the AFL-CIO and its member-affiliated organizations never gave up the fight, always lobbied for this in every Congress, and finally got the right president in the White House to get it done.
And what does it mean for federal employees, the ones who are in the agencies day in and day out doing the jobs, knowing now that the struggle that many others went through, they are able to have a voice at work?
Well, it's never safe because there's always a future Congress that can take it away. So the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. If you look back at where we were and where we are, people that now take for granted hours of work, overtime, assignment of dirty jobs or anything that is favoritism or nepotism or any of the isms that you and I relate to, like racism and all those other things, was rampant in the federal government. I mean, it was just crazy. They were a horrible employer, and they just treated their employees like dogs. I mean, it was really bad. I worked as a federal employee. I spent a whole bunch of years as a wage-grade employee with dirty fingernails down in the pits, you know, doing the jobs that people do in the federal government. We were providing essential goods and services, but it was hard work. And, you know, we didn't feel like second-class citizens, and we didn't want to be treated like second-class citizens. So this the passage of this monumental executive order raised us up. And, you know, it's and it can be taken away. So my caution to the federal employees out there is don't take anything for granted, because we are a huge target right now of the conservative wing that is going after public employees, school teachers, firefighters, police officers. And of course, they don't see that taking away those jobs take away essential services and essential goods to the public.
Shuler echoed Ault's caution against taking collective bargaining rights for granted.
Certainly, we can never be too comfortable and sit back and be complacent, because in today's economy, especially where workers have been facing such challenges, we have to really be ready to be active, be mobilized, and exercise our voice in this democracy and make sure that the voices of the 99% are being heard.
Ault also noted the importance of recognizing the services that federal workers provide the American people.
It's the public. We cannot serve anybody more than we serve the public. The public deserves more, and we give it to them. If the public understood that their checks were going to be slower, if the veterans were now going to have 45 patients to serve by one nurse in the Veterans Administration, and this person is an Iraq War veteran with amputated limbs, no, I don't think they'd stand for it. It's those kinds of things that bring this to the public's front.
Lastly, Shuler expressed optimism for what the next 50 years holds for the labor movement.
My hope is that the union movement will be alive and well and representing more and more kinds of workers, different industries and jobs that are perhaps not even imagined today in technology and in the green movement, etc. So we are adapting and changing with the times. So my hope is that the union movement will be alive and well in 50 years.
Thank you to our guests this week, AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman, Democracy for America Chair Jim Dean, and the AFL-CIO's Liz Shuler and Ron Ault. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word.